they put him in a cave at Makeda. And Joshua said, roll great stones under the mouth of the cave and set men by it after them, but stay not ye. They still had things to do. They were to pursue their enemies and to deal with them. And so I think that was a very good strategic thing. So when Joshua and the children of Israel finished the slaughter, they really, really did the people in. So when it was over, Joshua called the people together at Makeda, and so he told the people, open the mouth of the cave and bring these kings out. So they brought the kings out. You know, I'm assuming those kings were not very glad to see the light of day. They knew that they didn't have anything to look forward to. So they came and brought them out, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, the king of Eglon. And so they brought these five kings out, and he called for the people, the soldiers. He had them to come, and he said, come near and put your feet upon the necks of these kings. So here were the five kings, and they laid down, and the men, the soldiers, came and put their foot on the neck, symbolizing they had overcome them. They had defeated them. And so he had them do that. And so he said, fear not, nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus the Lord shall do to all your enemies against whom you fight. And then afterward, Joshua had them slain, had them put to death, and hanged them on five trees. And they were hanging upon the trees until the evening. Do you remember what the law of Moses said about somebody who was hanged? Only until sundown, right? Right. And that's why hypocritically the Jews had to be sure that Jesus was taken down from the cross. You know, they had him killed early. In other words, the soldiers came and killed him. I mean, killed the two thieves. But Jesus was already dead. But they took the body down anyway. So that's why it was. And so the time of the going down of the sun, Joshua commanded, they took them down from the trees, cast them into the cave where they had been hidden, and then raised a great big pile of rocks there. And I think of things, and I don't think point. It says, wherein they had hid them and themselves and laid great stones on the mouth of the cave unto this very day. I will go ahead and mention this, that in older times, back here, the practice was when somebody died, he was buried, and they would wait until the flesh had been consumed off the bones. And then they would gather them together, and they would put them in what was called an ossuary, and that was a box containing bones. So, you know, since they are there this day, then I'm sure that's what happened to them. Their flesh deteriorated and so on. Until this day, until this very day. And so it mentions the various places. Look at the places mentioned in verse 28, beginning. He took Makeda on that day and smote it with the edge of the sword. And then in verse 29, from Makeda they came to Libna, fought against Libna. And he was delivered into the hand of Israel, and he smote it with the edge of the sword. And notice how many were left remaining. None. Absolutely. They were all put to death. And he did unto the king thereof as he had done unto the king of Jericho. And then he passed from Libna and all Israel with him unto Lachish. And let me see. All right, so here is the valley, the coastal plain, and the Lachish was in that region. This I can't see it clearly enough to see where it was, but it's somewhere in that region right along in there. Maybe that'll help. All right. Yeah. It still won't magnify it, but thank you. Thank you. I need it magnified a little bit, but anyway. And sometimes they don't have the name on all of the places. I don't see it on there. But anyway, it was somewhere in this area of the coastal plain. So, Lachish. And it was a major city. It really was a major city. And then in verse 33, the king of Horam, king of Gezer. Now, Gezer was a city that ultimately the king of Egypt conquered it and gave it to Solomon as a wedding present. So that was Gezer. And of course, you don't say Gezer, you say Gezer, but I say Gezer. Now, this Bible does not have the diacritical markings in it, a major failing of this Bible. But I know that from Hebrew it would be Gezer. But in the diacritical markings we have in our English Bibles, it would be Gezer. And so, let's see. In verse 36, he went up from Eglon and all... No, I'm sorry. Verse 34. Joshua passed from Lachish and all Israel with him unto Eglon. So they fought against it, took it. And again, all the souls thereof he utterly destroyed. Do you have a word there? What is the word there, utterly destroyed? What word do you have? Devoted? You have devoted? Utterly destroyed? All right. So in verse 35, for example, they took it that day and smote it with the edge of the sword, and all the souls that were therein he utterly destroyed. So whatever the word is in your text, that's what it means. And we've talked about that utterly destroyed, meaning that that was because it was an offense to God for that city to remain. And so it might be one thing here and another thing there, the reason why, but that was the idea. And in verse 36, he went up from Eglon and all Israel with him unto Hebron, or Hebron. And they fought against it, and they took it and smote it with the edge of the sword. And again, all the cities, all the souls therein, left none remaining. According to what he had done to Eglon, he utterly destroyed it and the souls that were therein. Then he returned and went all Israel with him to Debir and fought against it. And he smote it, he took it, and all the king thereof, and all the cities thereof, smote them with the edge of the sword, and again that word, utterly destroyed all the souls that were therein, none left remaining. As he had done to Hebron, so he did to Debir, and to the king thereof. So the summary is that Joshua and the Israelites had smitten all this country now. This is the hill country. The hill country in the south and the lowland, that's the Shephelah. And I just want you to be able to know what that is. So there is the Shephelah right along here. It was the foothills of the mountains over here. So there's the Shephelah. So that's they took all of that. And there's another thing I want to point out as we go along here. All right. The lowland, the slopes, and all their kings, none remaining, utterly destroyed, all that breathed, and so on. Now look in chapter 11. As we look there, now we're getting into the central campaign. The central campaign. No. The central campaign is what we've looked at. Now we're going into the northern campaign. So we have the central campaign, the southern campaign, and now the northern campaign. That's what we're going to have now. So, this is now beginning the northern campaign. So, it came to pass when Jabin, king of Hazor, heard thereof. They had heard that these kings of the west had been defeated. So, he sends the king to the kings of the north. Hazor. It was a city of about 200 acres. It was a large city. Remember that Jericho was about 7 acres. So this was 200 acres. And it was one of the ones, Hazor is one of the cities that I got to see when I was over there. And it was the one that as you're approaching the city, you can see way up there high on the mound, they have the figure of a soldier standing up there as if he were looking and guarding, on guard and all that stuff like that. So Hazor, when he heard, he sent the king of Madon, the king of Shimron, the king of Aksath, the kings of that were on the north in the hill country, and in the Araba. Remember the Araba? Look at where it was, south of Kinnereth. You remember what Kinnereth was? What is Kinnereth? That's another name for the Sea of Galilee. So this was south of Kinnereth. So remember that Araba is that it was a cleft. The Jordan Valley was a cleft. And the Araba has different definitions, but here it's just part of that dip that was in the Jordan River Valley. All right, another thing. The Araba, south of Kinnereth, the lowland, and in the heights of Dor. Now, Dor would be over here, that Dor, right there, heights of Dor. And the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Jebusite in the hill country. Now, here's another interesting thing here. It mentions in verse 3, the last part of that verse, what nationality does that mention? Scott, do you see what nationality that mentions? Hivite? Yeah. Yeah, Hivite. Now, if you'll remember, in 9:7, look back in 9:7, and that will give you a reference to the Gibeonites. You see that? The Gibeonites were Hivites. So here they have some more Hivites. But look at where these were. The Hivite under Hermon in the land of Mizpah. So Hermon was this great mountain up here. Like right up there off the map. That was Hermon. So this was way up there in the north. That was in a different place from the Hivites, the Gibeonites. So they were spread all around. And so they went on and they met together. Oh, they're getting together now. They're gathering together because they know these Israelites are just sweeping the country. And so they're very, very worried. So they gathered together at the waters to Merah to fight with Israel. And by this time, Joshua had been reassured, wouldn't you think? He's been reassured, but the Lord said to Joshua, "Don't be afraid of them, for tomorrow, about this time, I will deliver them up all slain before Israel. And you will hock their horses and burn their chariots with fire." So Joshua came, and all the people of war with him, or with them. By the waters of Merom. Now, Merom probably is a reference to Lake Hule. That little, again, let's see if I can show you right quick. Hule, that's Lake Hule right there. So probably somewhere in that vicinity, the waters of Merom. So they're taking all this territory, all this land. And let's see. And Jehovah delivered them into the hand of Israel, and they smote them and chased them by great Sidon. That's way up there north, almost to the extent of our map, but up there at Sidon. So this was in the north. And so he turned back at that time and took Hazor and smote the king thereof with a sword. For Hazor before time was the head of all those kingdoms. So it was a kind of a coalition up there. And the king of Hazor was over all of that. And he took Hazor and smote the king with it. And smote all the souls and so on, all the cities, smote them with the edge of the sword. And again, we have that utterly destroyed them. And notice the expression in verse 12. Look at the last verse 12, the end of verse 12. Donald, can you read that? Verse 12, read the last part of verse 12. That's right. That's what I wanted you to get, as Moses had commanded. And Moses had commanded it because the idea was, if they left these pagans, what would they do? The people would begin to imitate these pagans. So God said, no, wipe them out. That was the whole idea. And the reason why they didn't wipe Jericho out was why? Remember Rahab. That was the only reason they didn't wipe all the people out there. So they utterly destroyed them as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded. Now, in verse 13, Donald, go ahead and read that, please. Okay. So the only city that was burned that sat on a mound was Hazor. And that city still sits on a mound. And it's a really remarkable city, and it was a strong city. But at this time, they burned that city, made a point. So, as the Lord commanded Moses, his servant, so did Moses command Joshua, and so did Joshua. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord commanded Moses. So he took all of this territory, the hill country, the south. The south is another name for the Negev. That's that southern area there in the in Judea. And the land of Goshen and the lowland. Now, the land of Goshen, I don't believe, is a reference to the territory in Egypt. That would not fit the context at all. So likely this was another place named Goshen, because it's not included any of the ideas, like the lowland, the Arabah. So this was not the Goshen in Egypt. And from Mount Halak that goeth up to Mount Seir, and Seir was the territory of the Edomites, even under Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon, under Mount Hermon. So this is in the extreme north. That's where this is going on. So he smote all their kings, put them to death, made war a long time with all these kings. And there was not a city that made peace with the children of Israel, save whom? The Hivites. These were the Gibeonites. And they took it all in battle. I wanted to mention something about the Gibeonites. Do you remember what the children of Israel did with those Gibeonites when they captured them? What did they make them? They made them slaves. And they particularly attached them to getting the wood and the water that would be needed in worshiping. Now, many years later, when the children of Israel were carried away captive, and it was time for them to return, as they examined who was there and so on, they said, we need some of the Nephilim. Nephilim. Now, the word Nephilim is formed from Natan, which means to give. So who do you guess the Nephilim were? They were the given ones. And they were the ones that were dedicated to the worship of the tabernacle and so on. So I think that's very interesting. When the children of Israel returned, there were none of the Nephilim. They said, we need some of the Nephilim to be servants to minister to the tabernacle and everything like that. I think that's fascinating. So these were the... That's what they did. And, that's right. They were the Gibeonites. That's right. That's right. So, and the inhabitants of Gibeon, they took all in battle, for it was of the Lord to harden their hearts to come against Israel in battle, that he might utterly destroy them, that they might have no favor, that he might destroy them, as the Lord commanded Moses. So look in verses 21 through the end of that chapter. In verse 21, Jamie, read verse 21, please. Okay. Now, again, do we know the Anakim? They were the giants. They were the giants. That's right. And we know they were giants because we actually have the measurements of some of them. So they were distinctly, definitely giants. So he utterly destroyed them. There was none of the Anakim left in the land of the children of Israel. Where were their Anakim? In verse 22. Okay, that's the territory of what? Exactly where they were discovered later on, where David encountered Goliath and so on. Now then, there's a list of the kings, and I'm not going to read all of those, not at all. But in chapter 12, look at the order of this. The list of the kings that were smitten. You start out with Sihon, and from Arnon to the Jabbok, and Og, and then the list of Jericho and Ai and Bethel and all these other. Let me see. I think I counted about 33 cities total. 33 cities total. The Lord gave it to them, like he said, didn't he? I'm going to give it to you. So he did. All right, now, as we're dealing with Joshua, do you happen to remember how old Joshua was when he died? 110. He's getting up in years now. Time's coming when he's going to pass away. He's going to die. And so the Lord is beginning to make preparation for this and talk with him about it. Joshua was old and well stricken in years, and he said, "You are old and well stricken in years. There remaineth yet much more land to be possessed." And so he mentioned the land which was to be possessed, all the regions of the Philistines, and what else is mentioned at the end of verse 2? Geshurites. Now let me show you. This was in this territory right up here. In that territory right up there. Geshur. So that was the territory that remained. And when Absalom fled after he was exiled, he fled up there to his grandfather who was king of Geshur. Okay? So we know that place. All right. So, and when he said all the regions of all the Geshurites from the Shihor, which is before Egypt, even to the border of Ekron. So these are the cities. And look at what else he says. The Shihor, which is before Egypt, even to the border of Ekron northward, which is reckoned to the Canaanites. The five lords of the Canaanites. The five lords of the Philistines. The Gazites, the Ashdodites, the Ashkelonites, the Gittites, which were the Gath, and the Ekronites, also the Avim. And I have a footnote. Yeah, I have a footnote. This Bible does not do footnotes very well. All right. All right. This is what the footnote says. Also the Avim from the south. So it doesn't really give us much information. And then on the south, all the land of the Canaanites and Merah that belonged to the Sidonians and Aphek to the border of the Amorites. This is going up the the west coast there, going up the west coast, and the land toward the Gibeonites, and all Lebanon toward the sun rising, from Baal Gad under Mount Hermon. This is the extreme northern part of the country. And so then what does he do in verse 8? What does he begin to do? Like in verse 8, with him who received their inheritance. All right, Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. So the Reubenites and Gadites received their inheritance, which Moses gave them beyond the Jordan eastward, even as Moses the servant of the Lord gave them, from Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of Arnon. Remember that Arnon, you remember what Arnon is? You remember where Arnon is? All right. Yeah. I believe that. This, I mean, I cannot tell. I can't read it. Yeah, Arnon. All right, that's Arnon. So, that river, all the way up to that river, and then go on down as it goes along, all Mount Hermon, Bashan, unto Salakah, all the kingdom of Og and Bashan, who reigned in Ashtaroth and Edrei, all these did Moses smite and drove them out. Nevertheless, the children of Israel drove not out the Geshurites. See, that would be the little kingdom that belonged to the... At this time, he would not be the grandfather, but ultimately, one from there would become the grandfather of Absalom. And Geshur and Maacah dwelt in the midst of Israel unto this day. Only unto the tribe of Levi he gave no inheritance. So why did he not give an inheritance? Children of Levi. Do you remember? Because the offerings by fire became their inheritance. All right? The offerings made by fire became their inheritance. So I want to go ahead and skip pretty quickly over this part now. And it describes in detail the territory. And I think you can read all of that. And look down in verse 24. He gave the tribe of Gad unto the children of Gad according to their families and so on. And then down in verse 27, the rest of the kingdom of Sihon, king of Heshbon, the Jordan and the border thereof, unto the uttermost part of the Sea of Kinnereth, Sea of Galilee, toward the Jordan eastward. This is the inheritance of the children of Gad according to their families. And then it goes on describing the inheritance of the half-tribe of Manasseh. And read verses 42. Mike, how about reading 13, 42 through the end of that chapter? Thirty-two through the end of that chapter. Isn't that interesting? Yes. So as we continue looking down here, again, I want to skip, not take too much time in this. Beginning in verse 1, 14, chapter 14, it mentions, these are the territories of Canaan which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed unto them. So they were distributing the territory of the land now. So the children of Israel were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. They gave no portion unto the Levites in the land save cities to dwell in, the suburbs. What do you have in verse 4 for suburbs? Common lands, yeah, okay. So the surrounding area, that's it, for their substance, their cattle, their substance, as God commanded Moses. Note how many times it says, as God commanded Moses. That's right. And so the children of Israel did that. They divided the land. So now the children of Judah came near to Joshua in Gilgal. And this is an interesting, you know, I always say that. And this to me is a particularly significant thing. Mike, let me go ahead and let you read from verse 6, 14, 6. I'll tell you what, just read through verse 12. I like that translation because it's one that I remember from years and years ago, which is, give me this mountain. That's exciting. Give me this mountain. What was the situation of Caleb at this point? Good as he had ever been. Strong as he had ever been. Still able to go out and fight. And if he didn't have such a problem with being scared, he wasn't scared 45 years before. He's not scared now. He's ready to go. And I really like this. The King James, I like this. So, all right, read verse 12 again, Mike. I mean, if you were that old, 85 years old, let me have this mountain, and maybe that the Lord will help me to drive these giants out. Man, that's something to take on giants. Sometimes we all have to take on giants, don't we? And so, remember, these two men had been together. How long had they known each other? All these years. They were the only two left of the men of fighting age. That they were the only ones left alive. Isn't that something? That's right. That's right. So Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron. Now, Hebron turns out to be a city of refuge. So the entire city was not given to Caleb, but the environs, the suburbs of it around. So that's the idea. And later on that will be made plain. He blessed him. He gave Hebron unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, unto this day. Because, look at why. He wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. Now, we have this note. Now, the name of Hebron aforetime was what? Kiriath Arba. Kiriath meaning a village or a town. Kiriath Arba. So, Arba, this Arba is mentioned here. He was the same as Anak. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. Do any of you have that word, Arba, there in verse 15? Okay, you have it? Okay. Is it in italics? Okay, all right. The greatest man among the Anakim, and the land had rest from war. All right, so the distribution is not yet over. And this thing about Caleb, we'll find some more in chapter 15 about Caleb. So the lot for the tribe of the children of Judah came out according to their families, the border of Edom, under the wilderness of Zin, southward at the uttermost part of the south. Their south border was from the uttermost part of the salt sea, from the bay which looketh southward, and it sent out northward out the ascent of Akrabim, passed along Zin, went up by the south of Kadesh Barnea. That's out in the wilderness there, where they stopped as they went up and passed along. So it went up by the south of Kadesh Barnea, passed along by Hezron, went up by Adar, and turned about to Carib. So we don't worry about these things, the territory there. And he went out at the brook of Egypt. So that brook of Egypt was not the Nile. The brook of Egypt. Let's see if I can get it over here. Was here called Besor. No, here it is. The brook of Egypt. There it is. The brook of Egypt. So it went down. The territory of Judah went down over to this point. They had a large area. And they were given that. A strong tribe, a big tribe. All right, let's just go ahead and read a little bit more. Yeah. I'm trying not to deal with everything. In verse 7 of 15, the border went up from Debir, from the valley of Achor. Remember Achor? What was Achor? Remember Achan? What valley was he killed in? Achor. What does Achor mean? Troubling. So the valley of Achor, looking north toward Gilgal. And look in verse 8. All right. Scott, read verse 8. All right, in verse 8, you had the reference to the valley of what? You know what Ben means? Son. That's right, son of. Most of the time when you see the valley of the son of Hinnom, it's singular. But once in a while, it is plural. But anyway, the same, the site of Jebusites southward, the same as Jerusalem. So the Jebusites had probably not at this point, but was written in view of what happened later on. All right. So why don't we stop at this point?